It's April 29th. It's actually really April 30th, but that's fine. 10 years ago, William and Kate got married. They're celebrating their 10th year. It's been 100 days, and Joe Biden made a speech, which is good. And it's the 86th birthday to the original Bernie bro, Larry Sanders. Happy birthday, Larry. So when I started this, as you realize, I had just been laid off from my job, so obviously I had time on my hands. So what's happened on the job front? Just give you a quick update. I had a two telephone interviews, one for a mill, and that mill's about 3 hours away from my house, and I'd have to go rent there Monday to Friday and then come back home on the weekends. Everything was going good, but for the last telephone interview we had, I did not feel good about it. I was hemming and hawing inside myself about whether I wanted to go out to this town. As a result, I wasn't mentally prepared for the interview, and I missed a couple opportunities to really shine, and I don't know if it'll bite me. Come back and bite me or not, because the third interview is a in-person interview on site. Being mentally prepared to accept the job, maybe it's for the best, maybe it's not, but it sure hampered my ability to make a good impression. The second bit of job news is my old boss, who was also let go, is with another company, mining firm, and he wanted me to come work for him. And I said, "Oh yeah." He said, "You can work from home, not a problem." I said, "Oh, bonus." Just thinking of all the money I'd save on gas and air flights. And then today he comes back and says, "Well, instead of running through payroll, they'd like you to become a consultant." So I looked into it and I called an accountant, and he said it's pretty easy to do. However, I'm not sure whether I'm in that mind frame either to do it. So I think the bonus thing is at least I've had two companies reach out to me. So what I'm doing may be working. I don't know. If it's like you, if you're laid off and stuff and still looking for jobs, sometimes it's in who you know, I guess. I will let you know how things go. I want to talk a little bit about India, but first I'll tell you about Alberta. We're going back into another lockdown. Junior high and senior high school students are working from home now for the next 2 weeks. We're in a hard lockdown. Ontario's in a hard lockdown too. There's a lot of people pissed off about the lockdown, but you don't want people to die either. It's not as bad though in a lockdown trying to make sure we're safe and our friends and our family are safe either. Myself personally, still in a bubble. Only a few people that I associate with. I do have some friends that come over and we sit on the deck, drink coffee. It's not monotonous, it just is what it is. But I want to talk a little bit about India now, if you don't mind. In New Delhi, as he surveyed the thousands of people gathered at an election rally in eastern India on April 17th, Prime Minister Modi appeared jubilant. "Everywhere I look, as far as I can see, there are crowds," he said, his arms spread wide. "You have done an extraordinary thing." At the time, India was recording more than 200,000 coronavirus cases a day. In the western state of Maharashtra, oxygen was running short, and people were dying at home because of a shortage of hospital beds. In Modi's home state, crematoriums were being overwhelmed by the dead. Those scenes were just a prelude to the devastation now unfolding in India. It is recording more infections daily, at last count 379,000, than any other country since the start of the pandemic. Hospitals are turning away ill patients, and their relatives are frantically searching for medical oxygen. The virus has crushed India's health system. Patients are on their own. For Modi, the most powerful Indian Prime Minister in 5 decades, it is a moment of reckoning. He is facing what appears to be the country's biggest crisis since independence, a calamity that is challenging his vision of a proud, self-reliant nation. His own lapses and missteps are an increasing source of anger. As the cases skyrocketed, Modi continued to hold huge election rallies and declined to cancel a Hindu festival that drew millions to the Ganges River, despite pleas from health experts. Rather than making preparations for a second wave of cases in an already weak healthcare system, the government put much of its focus on vaccinations, a campaign too limited to blunt the oncoming disaster. The government repeatedly chose self-congratulation over caution, publicly stating that the pandemic was in its endgame in India as recently as last month. Modi had swept to a landslide re-election victory in 2019, offering Indians a brand of nationalism that views India as a fundamentally Hindu country rather than the secular republic envisioned by its founders. He's cultivated an image as a leader capable of bold decisions to protect and transform the country. Now that image is in tatters, says Vinjay Sitapati, a scientist at Ashoka University in the northern Indian state of Haryana. Modi and his governing party built a formidable machine for winning elections, the man said, but their mindset of continuous campaigning has come at the cost of governance. Critics have called for Modi's resignation. The governing party rejects such criticisms. Modi's government has been working round the clock to fight the pandemic since the start of 2020, said Bijin Yant Panda, the VP of the BJP, the party that Modi belongs to. The number of active COVID positive cases has dwindled to a trickle. The suddenness and scale of the present surge has taken everyone by surprise. Modi has acknowledged that the country is fighting a colossal battle against the coronavirus. India was successful in confronting the first wave of cases, he said in a radio address this week, but this storm has shaken the country. A national task force of experts and scientists set up to advise the government on its response to the pandemic did not meet at all in February and March, according to two people with knowledge of the matter who spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to comment. The task force met twice in April, and another meeting is scheduled for this week. In March, the government allowed an enormous month-long Hindi religious festival to proceed in a northern state. Earlier this month, the chief minister, a member of Modi's party, said that because the gathering was held on the bank of the Ganges River, which Hindus consider holy, there should be no corona. As the infections in the country climbed, Modi asked the religious leaders to consider making the rest of their observances symbolic in nature. Still, about 25,000 people took part in the final bathing ritual held Wednesday. More than 3 million devotees took part in one on April 12th. Inside a Delhi hospital, oxygen runs fatally short as COVID cases mount. Meanwhile, Modi threw himself into several state election campaigns, including a crucial one for his party, in the state of West Bengal. Although the state was not one of the hardest hit in the second surge, experts say the continued rallies sent a bad message. Health officials were reminding people to wear masks and maintain distance. Indians saw their prime minister doing just the opposite on national television every morning. His government kept misleading people during such a huge tragedy. Now people are paying with their lives, says Singh Dahiya, National Vice President of the Indian Medical Association. There is a current desperate struggle for oxygen across much of India, and it's revealed a lack of preparation by the government for a new surge. Although India launched a bidding process to build more than 160 new oxygen plants at hospitals across the country in October, only a small fraction had been installed as of April. In the past 2 weeks, the government has announced plans to build hundreds more of oxygen plants across the country, using money from a discretionary relief fund set up by Modi to tackle the pandemic. India launched a nationwide vaccination drive in January, but sent more than 60 million doses of domestically produced vaccines to other countries, both through commercial deals and as gifts. Such exports were halted in late March as case numbers began to rise in India. Anger is growing even among Modi voters. Shiva Shankarappa, a 60-year-old in the southern state of Karnataka, who goes by one name and works at a wholesale market, has been a Modi supporter for years. He thought Modi handled the first wave of the pandemic well, but said he was disgusted to see him on the campaign trail as deaths began to rise. Isn't there value for human life? Is an election more important than people, he asked. If Modi takes credit for the first wave going away, he has to take the blame now. For BJP supporters whose relatives died trying to find treatment for COVID-19, the sense of betrayal is acute. Goyal is a lawyer in a northern state and has been a party worker for nearly two decades. His mother-in-law was turned away from a hospital after hospital on April 25th. She received a few hours of oxygen at a site run by volunteers, but died at home the next morning. I will never support the party again. The government is completely absent. They have left the people to fend for themselves. This was a story written by Joanna Slater and Naya Masai from the Washington Post. In India's devastating coronavirus surge, anger at Modi grows. Anger's really getting turned on to the leaders of a lot of countries right now. I know in Canada there was growing outrage at the fact that airplanes flying to India were coming here loaded with the variant and COVID virus. And a lockdown probably would have prevented it. A lockdown a year ago would have probably prevented it. Now we have a lot of government scrambling. So Canada is getting bad right now. India is just devastated. The United States seems to be holding its own, and they're vaccinating a lot of people. Trouble is, at the end of the day, they figure that 50% will be vaccinated and 50% won't. And you have to get to 70 or 80% herd immunity in order to really knock the virus back. In these times, looking for a job, trying to support your family, trying to keep them safe, it's a hard ask. But we do it. We do the best we can. And don't give up hope. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we can do this. That's all I got to say today. Thanks for listening to North of 48.